From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Pete Stoughton is out today. He'll be back next week. When Catherine Nicolai launched her podcast, which is called Nothing Much Happens, she hoped to put her nearly two decades of experience as a yoga and meditation instructor to use by helping listeners quiet the mind and fall asleep. For each episode, she would write soothing stories that both eased her listeners into a peaceful slumber and taught the principles of mindfulness so that waking hours might become sweet and serene as well. Now, 2 years later, Nicolai's podcast has become one of the most recommended and listened to podcasts for finding rest. So then Catherine decided to write a book. Just a lot to learn from Catherine. Catherine Nicolai, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. Let's start here. What are the things that we typically do wrong? I mean, I hate to start our interview with what we do that's bad and wrong about getting to sleep, but you have been working in this space as a yoga instructor and a meditation instructor and a podcaster who, this is what you do. You help people go to sleep. So how do you urge people away from what might be a bad ritual towards what they ought to be doing to help sleep?
First, I want to say, you know, for people, if they do feel like they are doing things wrong, to first just sort of step back from that shameful approach, because we are up against some really intelligent algorithms and some really well-designed devices that are designed to keep us up. And so I think times people often blame themselves when the truth is that the design is a bit more powerful than us. And it isn't just a matter of, if only I had a better willpower. That would be millions and millions of people right now are thinking the exact same thing. And it isn't the fault of those individuals. It's a very large problem. But so that might be my first thought is, don't double down by then shaming yourself because you were scrolling at 11:30 at night. there are big forces in the world trying to keep you doing that. I think what might be useful though is to notice if you already have some habits around bedtime. You know, if you can piggyback on them, then that's a really useful way to establish a new habit. So, for example, I love to read a book at bedtime. And there's always this moment where I'm going to put my devices away and take my book out. That moment happens every single night. Okay, that habit's established. Now, could there be something else that I could piggyback on that habit with? So now I do, sometimes I call it a 5-minute brain dump, where I'll actually set a timer for 5 minutes and I will just write for 5 minutes and download everything that's on my mind. Because it exists in the book, it's a lot, it doesn't feel like it has to live in my head. Often there's that feeling of, I gotta keep track of this, I have to remember this for tomorrow. And if I can get it down somewhere else, I can have some space. And then, of course, that choice of what you are going to read, what you are going to look at bedtime is going to influence how quickly you're going to be able to sleep. Of course, I would think that storytelling is a really useful medium here. And when you choose storytelling that makes you feel safe and relaxed and even that is pleasurable or somewhat nostalgic, I think all of that's going to add up to a better night's sleep.
So nice. Well, it's interesting. The brain dump into a notebook. I've heard this before, and also especially important to do it in the middle of the night if you haven't done it before you go to sleep at that 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. wake up. For me, it switches. It used to be 3 a.m. Now it's 2 a.m. It's funny, I've never done it. I always lie there. And I think this is what happens for a lot of people, especially in our stressful world right now. And even I was talking to my 81-year-old mother, and she wakes up at 2 a.m. every night, and she worries about her 4 kids, all of whom are in their 50s. Like, why should she be doing that? And what is the prevailing thought on why things are amplified in the middle of the night?
Well, So a little bit of this has to do with neuroscience and some of it just with psychology. Our anxieties are amplified at night. That is just something that is true of the universal human experience. And I remember the first time my therapist explained that to me, feeling a great relief that I said, I seem like I'm getting through the days, especially at the beginning of lockdown when I think that we were so there was just so much to be afraid of on a daily basis. And I said, I'm getting through the day okay. But boy, when it gets dark outside, my anxiety really ramps up. And she said, that's normal for humans. And I thought, okay, that's at least a little bit of a relief that that's a common experience. The neuroscience end of it is that when you wake in the middle of the night, there's sort of this part of your brain that runs on background programming. It's what your brain does when you're not doing anything. And that background programming tends to be worry, rumination, trying to predict the future, trying to consider what would the worst case scenario be. And if you don't interrupt that programming, it will simply continue. So what you need to do in order to shift out of that background mode is to get into task mode. You need to give your brain a job to do. It's hungry for a job to do, and it's just running on this weird programming. So, you know, that's when that was first explained to me, I had already been telling bedtime stories, but I was like, oh, that's exactly how the bedtime story works. It asks you, it gives you a task. Imagine this scenario. What does it feel like? How does it sound? How does it smell? How does it feel in your body? And if you can line up these tasks, you're going to shift out of that default mode. And almost as soon as you do, I hear this from listeners all over the world, as soon as I shifted over, I dropped right back off. But until I did, I was awake for hours. So I really think that that's the moment when you can recognize, oh, I'm spiraling, I am doing that background programming. If I can give my job a brain to do, so empowering, I can switch this back to sleep mode.
Oh, that's wonderful. If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Catherine Nicolai. She's a podcaster. Her podcast is Nothing Much Happens. From that podcast, she's written a new book by the same name, Nothing Much Happens, cozy and calming stories to soothe your mind and help you sleep. Catherine, I have to admit, every time in the middle of the night I go to sign up for the Calm app, for example, I just can't get myself to sign up for one more $10 a month thing. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't done it. So instead I turn on Netflix and hate to admit this, I watch Madam Secretary until I fall asleep. So that's my little ritual, but I know it's not good because it's, you know, the screen in front of me and so on and so forth. Your podcast, I had it on this morning. Wow, I wish I had had it on last night or in the middle of the night. Your voice, it's just something about a wonderfully soothing voice. Do you voice all of your stories?
Absolutely. I write and read every story that you'll hear on my podcast. You know, I've been a yoga teacher for 17 years, so I'm well trained in sort of using my voice to help bring people into that place of relaxation and rest. So that was kind of based on instinct. And I even have pretty strict rules. If I have an ad on my podcast, I read the ad in this tone of voice at this pace. If you're asleep, it will not wake you up. People tell me, I fell asleep listening to your ad. And that's part of that brain training too, is that, you know, those neurons that fire together, wire together, and you start to repeat this ritual every night of, I'm going to get down into bed. I'm going to turn everything off. I'm going to take two deep breaths. And you hear me say three words of the story and you're out. You know, it is a better choice than, I know you are certainly not alone in sort of the Netflix rewatch. That's a big thing, you know, and I get the comfort in that and the predictability of something. That's why we turn to it. My mom was somebody who could never fall asleep without the TV on. And now she's a podcast listener and my dad is really grateful.
That's wonderful. I like that. I'm just curious about during Shavasana and your yoga classes, does anyone stay awake?
You know, they do fall asleep a lot. I have this effect on people. But I always tell my students, don't resist it. If you feel like you're going to fall asleep, it is a sign that you need sleep. And I am watching over. And at some point, if you need to be woken up, I will take care of it. So just rest. It is okay. You think about even when you're home sometimes in bed at night, completely asleep, you might not actually be completely at rest. Like, I don't have kids, but I have dogs. And if my dog gets up, within 3 seconds, I am awake. I hear her claws on the floor. I know what's going on. It's at least at yoga when someone else is watching over. I'm like, this might be a more complete rest in these 5 minutes than you got last night. So please put yourself in my hands. I will watch over.
That's wonderful. The stories are meant to evoke what? The one I was listening to this morning gave me this wonderful picture of the trees and the gray skies, and it took me to a place where I could imagine this.
Mm-hmm. There's a certain recipe I always think about when I write. Mm-hmm. They're always going to be calming, relaxing stories. Mm-hmm. They're always going to have an element of nostalgia and familiarity. Even if it's sort of nostalgia for something you have never quite experienced yourself, it's that familiarity, recognizability. And then there's a lot of sensory detail. I'm always explaining how things smell or taste or feel or look, because I want the listener to be able to kind of pull those details around them like a blanket and be inside the story. I think that gives them sort of this soft landing place. They can imagine themselves in the story, and that gives them a break from everything else that's going on.
Mm. Why a book? You have this successful podcast, which you must have so much fun putting together. And then you're going, I mean, podcasting is the thing right now. It's the rage. It's what, you know, I spend all of my free time on podcasts. Why a book?
Well, I had always wanted it to be a book from the beginning. And it has been my dream since I was a child to write and publish a book. But when I first started out, I'd written a few stories and I had talked to a friend who was an illustrator, but being sort of a lay person who was not connected with the publishing industry at all, I could not imagine how it could be, how I would ever get it started. So I kind of put it on the shelf. And then one night I was ironically up in the middle of the night with a sick dog. And I'm just sort of laying on the floor with my dog petting or thinking. And I thought, oh, it's a podcast. And I remember like scrolling through my phone and buying a microphone at 3 o'clock in the morning. And we launched 6 weeks later. And it is hugely listened to. I mean, the amount of people who listen to it all over the world really blows my mind. But a lot of people said to me, I'd love to use your podcast without having my phone by my head. And I think there is something just really lovely about having a real book in your hands, getting to look at the illustrations. If you are a book lover, you never stop loving the actual physical book. So I think that it's going to reach people in a different way. It'll be a different tool in the arsenal, you know, and I'm really proud of how it looks and how it feels.
Well, this is nice too, for those who aren't like, probably both of our mothers, you know, they'd probably rather have a book. I mean, my mom, she every single night reads, you know, for several hours. And she, you know, this is another question that I wanted to get at is, you know, is it necessarily a bad thing? We talk to sleep experts that say, you know, if you're up in the middle of the night for several hours, it might not be a bad thing as long as you get enough sleep overall.
Right. There is that idea of sort of two sleeps or interrupted sleep, and that there maybe is like even a history of this in our ancestry and evolution. I think that isn't essential. And I remember I put it in the, that people not be stressed out about that. I put it in the instructions of the very first podcast I released just on this instinct level. I said, if you wake again in the middle of the night, first relax. Don't panic. Because I think we've all been there before. We woke up and we didn't get back to sleep and gosh, it was an awful day. And so when we feel that coming on, sometimes there's that tendency to seize up and panic. And, you know, I think it's not the end of the world if you're up for an hour and you fall back asleep. But I do think over time, you can train yourself by putting yourself back in task mode to make that time shorter and shorter and shorter, that I wake up, I'm aware of it. Oh, I know how to go back to sleep. I don't worry about it. And I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, conversely then, do we train ourselves to wake up?
I think there is a possibility of that, of anticipating it and saying to ourselves, I wake up every night at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I always like to remind people, as a yoga teacher too, your brain is listening to everything that you're saying. So if you keep saying to yourself, I'm exhausted, I don't get any sleep, and I wake up at 3 o'clock every day, it will be true. So I think that is definitely true. I have a friend who for years has never used an alarm clock, and she's a real good sleeper, but if she has to wake up at 5 o'clock to get to the airport, she tells herself that before she goes to sleep, and she does. Mm-hmm. So I think there is definitely some more interplay between sort of that waking mind and sleeping mind than we think there is.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about our breath. We've interviewed on this show James Nestor, who wrote Breathe, which is a newer book. You're probably familiar with it. And there were so many aha moments, you know, knowing that even though there's this thing that we do 25,000 times a day, most of us aren't doing it right.
Or are just aware of it, right?
Right. Can you talk about breathing as a relaxation tool?
Yeah. You know, I always think there's a reason that linguistically in so many languages all over the world, the word for breath and the word for soul or spirit is the same or related. And even in English, that S-P-R-I of respiration is the same S-P-R-I of spirit and inspiration. There is this inherent acknowledgement, even as we created language, that these things are connected. And sort of on the physiological level, I think about my breathing is basically giving information through my vagus nerve, right? The vagus nerve that runs on either side of your brainstem through your neck and into your chest, is that nerve is basically listening to you breathe. And then it's telling your nervous system what to do about it. Are we going to have to run or fight? Are we ready to digest our food and rest? Should we be in the healing response or the panic response? My vagus nerve is listening. And so I find it quite empowering to realize just by shifting the way I breathe, I can shift those signals going through my nervous system. So we do a couple of deep breaths always at the beginning of nothing much happens, right before the story starts, a deep breath in through the nose and a deep sigh out through the mouth. And that's something I teach in yoga at the beginning and end of every practice, because it is sort of naturally settling. And because the exhale is slightly longer than the inhale, again, this improves vagal tone. It's something so basic to me, it always surprises me when listeners say, oh, I've never had a breath like that. I'm like, my goodness, here's a free tool at your fingertips. You can use it as many times a day as you need to. And the book has a couple extra breathing techniques in it, ways to use your breath to help bring more calm, reduce anxiety, and basically induce that healing response the body wants to be in. But because of sort of the nature of life right now, we're in like this low level of constant anxiety, broken up with spikes of higher anxiety. So being able to use your breath to recenter and start over, so, so useful.
How much has all of this changed your yoga and meditation practice?
Not much at all. I think it probably was the other way around. It was birthed by my yoga and meditation practice. And I love, classic meditation. I usually sit Vipassana style meditation, which is sort of a formal practice, but I also recognize the power of storytelling and could see that as a yoga teacher, that sometimes there are these esoteric ideas that come from the philosophy and you're not really sure how to apply them to your life. And a story can make all the difference because it can make you say, oh yeah, I've been in that position. Oh, I understand. And this is how I would use it. So I'd already seen as a yoga teacher that the way to connect a philosophical idea with a real life application was storytelling. So then I just applied that to this idea of a busy monkey mind at nighttime. And the idea was kind of already formed.
That's really nice. I'm so happy to have found your podcast. It's really... It's a gift. And again, I just have to say it again. Your voice is just incredible.
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear
it. Yeah. Well, the book is Nothing Much Happens, Cozy and Calming Stories to Soothe Your Mind and help you sleep. And Catherine, I just have to ask you a personal question. Tell me about your nighttime regime. I mean, are you still waking up? Do you wake up in the middle of the night? And if so, how many nights a week?
You know, I didn't wake up at all last night. Now it really does have to do with my dogs get up. Usually I don't wake myself up. If I do, I'm usually awake for less than a minute because I do have this well-worn path in my brain that just walks me right into a narrative and I drop back off. As far as going to bed at night, I mean, I'm somebody who would happily be in bed at 8:30 just because I like to read a book. I like to relax. I've never been a night owl. I've always said to people, I'm not a night owl and I'm not an early riser. I've got like 45 minutes at 4 o'clock when I'm at top of my game. And the rest of the time I would like to go to bed. So I think I'm just naturally, I've always said like a lot of sloth energy. I have like a skincare routine that I think of as sort of like a little meditation and self-care. It takes me about 5 minutes. You know, it's a time when I just am taking care of myself. And then I get into bed and talk with my wife a little bit and relax with the dogs and read my book. And usually I'm out after a page or two and sometimes I'm bummed out because I wanted to read more, but I can't keep my eyes open. So that's a well-worn path in my psyche. When it's time for bed, I go to bed.
The thing I like about something like your podcast, and it is akin to why I like to rewatch Madam Secretary, is because I don't have to do any work. And for some reason, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I don't want to read because that feels like something I have to do.
Yeah, you need to be sort of the passive recipient at that point. So I agree. That's why, and I teach this a little bit in the book, why if you wake in the middle of the night, you don't necessarily need to open the book or start the podcast again. Once you've got this sort of file folder in your head of calm places, you can just pull out that file and think back through the details. It's enough. It gives your brain the task. And I think another reason why it appeals to us so much to rewatch the shows and stuff is we know what to expect. There is that familiarity, kind of predictability. Sometimes people have asked me, oh, are you worried that your stories will be too predictable or you'll be writing about the same things? I'm like, no, that's the idea. Is that, yeah, you know what to expect. If you listen to one or two episodes, and I always repeat the story, I always say it again twice, or say it again in the second one, I do slower. And I let people know that at the beginning, I'm going to tell you the story twice. And often just that bit of information gives people permission to drop off. Even though they know nothing's going to happen, just realizing, oh, it'll come around again, out they go. So I think you're right. You need to be passive in that moment, not doing anything. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting to say it twice, tell the story twice, because how often are we listening to a story and thinking about something else at the same time and we miss key elements or even little details of the story? You hear it the second time and you go, it brings awareness to the fact that you didn't hear all of it, which is... Yeah, it's a good lesson.
It is. I remember when we recorded the first season, I recorded it in a recording studio with my audio engineer, Bob Wittersheim, and he didn't have a script or anything. He was just listening. And he'd say, you put some extra stuff in the second story. And I'd say, no, Bob, I didn't. I don't even have it printed twice. I went through it exactly the same way. And he'd be like, no, you didn't. You got something in there. I didn't hear it the first time. But that's just human nature. We don't catch everything the first time.
Yeah, that's funny. Oh, it's great. Well, so glad that I have this opportunity to talk with you this morning, Catherine. Catherine Nicolai is my guest. Her podcast, as well as her new book, are called Nothing Much Happens, Cozy and Calming Stories to Soothe Your Mind and Help You Sleep. Catherine, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for speaking with me. It was a great conversation.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.